VoiceAmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio. And this is the classic Dan and Dave show. Dan on the left coast, and he is a left winger, and me on the right coast, and I am a right winger. So we make up full plane, don't we, Dan?
Yeah, I think you were going to say the classic car show.
No, I didn't.
But I don't mind being called a classic, just don't call me old.
What are you then? You're old looking
I'm,
to me.
I'm well appreciated.
You're like my.
I'm tarnished. The years have tarnished me, but not turned me yellow. I don't know.
Well, you're like I am, like my grandfather used to say. Both of us are just suffering from extreme maturity. So there. Okay, speaking of maturity, you know, these kiddies that are out crying and marching. Did you all have marches again last night, or do you know?
You know, I don't know. I suspect we did, but it didn't seem to make the news if we did, so maybe it's becoming commonplace.
In my humble opinion, which I know thousands are waiting for, actually nobody's waiting for my opinion, but in my opinion, most of these marchers, let's just say any of them under 22, any of the marchers under 22, I think they should be jerked up and given one severe spanking. And tell them what that spanking is for, because they're not acting like young adults. They're acting like a bunch of little bitty babies. And the ones over 22, 23 and older, I think they should be arrested and put in jail and fined severely and let George Soros bail them out, or whoever. They're not marching for a cause. They're just marching to beat their chest and break in and rob and steal and raise hell in general. And they're probably being paid by Soros or someone else.
You're harsh. You're harsh.
No, I'm right.
It's a free country, and God bless them. If they want to get out there and express their opinions, go for it. What I have a problem with is when they start defecating in the middle of the street,
on our flag,
on property. Yep.
I agree.
Windows.
I don't
like that stuff.
I agree. I agree 100%. You know, they have every right in the world to march. They don't have the right in Portland, as I saw, to where an ambulance was running hot and they were blocking a street where the ambulance couldn't go by. Now, if they cause somebody's death because that ambulance couldn't get to them, then I think every one of the little shits should be charged. I think that's that, to me, teeter-totters on murder, in fact. So, yeah.
That's an interesting scenario.
But it happened in Portland. I assume you're aware of it. One of your major roads, they were holding hands and blocking traffic. And an ambulance was about, four or five cars deep and was running hot. And they couldn't get through the traffic to go after whoever was needing them. And as far as I'm concerned, you do that, then you've gone over the well over the edge. As far as protesting, walking down the I don't even want them in my street, but they have every right to go to a playground where they belong and stand out and yell and scream and jump up and down and cry because they lost. They don't even know what they lost in most cases. But they can stand there and cry and wring their hands and, what are we going to do? I don't care about that. But
I'm just not feeling much understanding coming from the right coast over there. It feels like you're being overly critical, and
I'm just pointing out that those kids are stupid.
Hardened here.
I think they Well, you know, they're a bunch of babies. They're just like the actors and the people that said they were leaving the country, which for some reason now they're not. Because they realize they got it too good here, so they're gonna stay and protest. You know, whatever. If you say you're gonna do something,
there. I think
go.
If they said they're gonna leave the country, I think we ought to hold them to it. You know, they made a commitment, they made a promise, they made a statement that they should live up to.
They're not going to.
I totally agree with you there.
They realize that this is the best country in the world. And my personal opinion, with what I've seen of what Trump is doing as far as getting surrounding himself with potential very good people, this country is going to be great again. And not only will people have to eat crow on the election, I hope in a couple of years they're eating crow on what they think about Mr. Trump. You know, obviously there are always going to be people protesting, and you know they can't even come up with why they don't like him, but somebody told them not to like him, and so that's good enough for them, so they won't like him. But you know, for the most part, it's bull. But I do like the people that Trump has called in. I think he's showing his ability to build bridges and to reach out to others. And that whether you like him or not, he's going to try to put the best person in the right place to be in his administration and lead America forward.
Well, and these positions need to be ratified by Congress or by the Senate. Is that correct?
Not all. Some of them do, but not all. A cabinet-level position, yes, but like General Flynn, if he's an advisor, then that does not have to be ratified by Congress, so, or by the Senate. It's only the Senate that
does it. So the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense,
they have to be ratified by the Senate.
Attorney General, yes.
Attorney General, yeah. Well, Attorney General is Secretary of Department of Justice, and yes. And that's a cabinet level position. So, you know, there are, you know, and what I don't know the details of it, and I apologize to you and both of the people that are listening that I don't have the details of it, but there is the Democrats with Obama put into some kind of deal in the Senate. I don't know. I don't think it's. I can't say that it's law, but they put in something in the Senate to get his people approved, and now it's about to come back and bite them in the ass that they're not going to be able to block Trump and his appointees or his people that they send. Plus the fact that obviously they have the Republicans have a majority in the Senate, so they can try to block it. But from what I understand, they're not going to be able to because of their own maneuvering.
Yeah, it's. I think that's one of the interesting things that's going to come up is how cooperative the Democrats are in both the House and the Senate. And well, they don't have to be cooperative. I mean, they could really be a thorn in Trump's side. The Republicans, for sure, a thorn in Obama's side to a degree. However, I remember having conversations with you over the last 8 years where it seemed like the Republicans totally capitulated and threw in the towel. So we'll see how stiff-spined the Democrats are.
Yep. Just want to mention that you have to go at about a quarter after, but we've got a great guest coming on. Gary's been on before, Gary Burns. He's the author of a book about the Clintons, and he was a Secret Service uniform agent in the White House, and his book was about the Clintons. But what we're going to talk about today is the the change of power and what the Secret Service goes through on the changing of the guard, the changing of the power. And Trump has thrown a very interesting kink into the transition. I don't know if you heard this, or Melania did actually, that she and Barron, their son, are going to stay in New York, and Donald is going to take the White House as his residence, because he has to. And, you know, I don't know if it's for the first 6 months. They want to keep Barron in the school that he's in. So it's going to put an extra burden, obviously, on the Secret Service, that they're going to have to protect not only Donald and what he does, but also Melania and being in New York. So,
well, I hadn't heard that, and in my initial reaction is I don't like it. I think it's the wrong decision. I think she needs to be. I think it's more important for her to be in Washington than it is for Barron to be in the same school.
I agree with you. I think this is supposedly, and I wasn't in the bedroom, so I don't know, but supposedly this was one of the deals that she had brought up prior to him even running, that, you know, she wasn't going to pull Barron out of his school. I agree with you. I don't know all the circumstances, but I don't agree with it. And I don't agree.
Although it does kind of, it gives you an interesting look at her traditional values, I think, which, you know, we want to know more about who she is and what her values are. But obviously, Barron is very important to her.
Well,
yeah. And I have to tip my hat her way on that issue.
I don't disagree with that at all. But I think, just like I said about your President Obama flying around the country in my Air Force One to promote your girlfriend Hillary, I don't have a big problem with a sitting president flying around the country promoting Hillary or anybody else. However, I think whoever he's supporting should pay the gas tab and the plane tab and the Secret Service tab and any other tab. I don't think as a taxpayer, my point being is, okay, the Trumps have decided Donnie will take the White House and Melania will take Trump Tower. That's fine. You know, that's their decision. But I think Trump should pay for the secret, what it's going to cost us. I don't think the taxpayer should.
Wow. Yeah, gosh.
Put that in your pipe and smoke on it.
I have to digest that one. That's a tough one there. You know, the Trump brand is such a big brand, and it's so obvious, and there's so many people that hate Trump. You know, I got to believe that there's going to be terrorism on his properties. And he's got a lot to protect.
Well, the NBA.
It's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
The NBA, or three teams on the NBA, are protesting Trump, so they're not staying in his five-star hotels like they normally would. You know what I say to the NBA? Screw them. You know, they shouldn't be in politics.
Stay in Motel 6.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I have no use for that. Well, Dan, it's about time for you to get a smile on your face and take out of here. Go do your thing, and we will.
Well, I appreciate your understanding this morning, and I'm sorry for the conflict, but things come up.
I'm sure they will. private joke there, folks. Anyway, we're going to take a break and wait for Gary to give us a call in on our conference line. And there he is. There's Gary. Gary, you just caught us as we're about to take a break. I'll be back with you right after this.
Okay. Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And as always, we do thank you for listening to America's Web Radio and the Dan and Dave Show. And we've got Gary Burns on with us right now. Gary is the author of a book that I personally, Gary, think you may have helped influence a lot of folks. Your book's about the time that you were an officer, a uniformed Secret Service officer in the White House protecting the Clintons. And, you know, I would assume during the election, and maybe still, your sales of your book have probably been very good.
Yeah, the Crisis of Character has done very well, thank you. As of about 2 weeks ago, we've sold about 450,000 copies, so I'm very appreciative.
Well then,
yeah, I think it had some effect. It certainly, the people that I heard feedback from, it certainly affected them in how they looked at the Clintons, and so I think it did have some effect. Absolutely.
Well, your wife should be happy with you and let you start writing your second book, huh?
Well, and she let me go hunting, so
well, that's
good.
That's good. You know, there are interesting things coming out, and I don't know. You know, back in, I think, junior high school or high school, I read a book about the Secret Service, but it's so far out of date now I don't remember anything about it. But it seems like the our president-elect may be throwing some different wrenches into the matter, one of which he's the richest president that's or potential elected president to be going to serve in office. He obviously has property and places around the world, and he showed off one of them by going to New Jersey and his golf course there, and yet he continued to keep working. And then Melania came up, and we just found out this weekend that she plans to stay with their son Barron in New York and let Donald move into the White House, but she at least for the first 6 months, we'll stay in New York. What does the Secret Service go through in this transitional period?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And they're not completely, what you just described is not completely foreign to the Secret Service. They protect their families in multiple locations. They're doing it right now. You know, the Bush family has a place in Kennebunkport, Maine. They have a place in Houston. George W. is in Waco. So what the service will be doing, they'll protect Melania and their son up in New York at their place. They'll set it up just like they do any other residents.
and they'll protect it. They'll be protecting it on the ground. They'll use different procedures, you know, for controlling the entry and exit to the to where they live, and to the hotel itself will be under observation. And then, of course, the White House, where the president-elect Trump will be living, as President Trump, will be just the White House just like it is today. And the service will make it work. They always do. And like I said, it's not completely foreign to them that they've had to do this kind of thing before.
Well, what kind of – well, I wanted to add, before I forget it, how deep does the service go into the family? Obviously, kids would be protected, I assume, particularly if they're going
right.
to school or if they're going to going
so
to college
it,
or something.
It differs from family to family. For instance, the Obamas had her mother-in-law, Mrs. Obama, the mother-in-law, lived with them and was kind of like a nanny, helping to take care of the kids. So she probably got a little bit more protection normally than if she still lived in Illinois. It depends on what the threat level is. And the truth is the service doesn't talk about everybody that they protect. They only talk about the obvious ones because people know it. We know they're going to be protecting President Trump. We know they're going to be protecting his immediate family, his kids, possibly the spouses, maybe the kids' children, his grandchildren. It all depends on what the threat matrix says. And the director of the Secret Service and the president, and there's also a group of people, it's about six executives. Some are executives of the government. Some are executives from other companies, like board members. And they also dictate who the Secret Service protects to take some of the politics out of it. But the director of the Secret Service has a lot of say in that, too. And to be honest with you, my experience in the 12 years that I was there, they're more caught. They'd rather protect them than not. And then if they want to back up later on and not protect them, but they usually go forward with it if it's been suggested this person be protected.
So if it's someone, you know, let's say a child, now that would be 24/7, correct?
Yes.
So we're looking at
when they go to school, when they go to play with their friends. It might be. Here's a scenario that's pretty common that I experienced. So let's say their child, President Trump's child, wants to have some friends over. They come over to the White House just like anywhere else, and they'll have a great time at the White House because the White House staff, the Secret Service, would much rather have Barron playing inside the White House complex with his friends than him going to the Prince house. But if they want to go to the friend's house, they will. The service will do a survey of the house. They'll meet the family. They'll explain to them, you know, what the minimums are, and they'll protect them.
So, and I want to remind everybody that, okay, the Secret Service, are they still under the Treasury Department?
No.
Okay.
No, the Secret Service was moved over to Homeland Security.
Okay, well then,
after 9/11.
But
they were in the Treasury Department when I was there from 91 to 2003, but no, they're now part of Homeland Security.
Okay, but they still must, you know, they just did they got a $30 million bust on counterfeit money, and I can't
remember. Yes, they did.
So,
yes, that is still their job. The Secret Service agents still secure our currency. They still investigate fraud and counterfeit, but they're under Homeland Security.
Ah, okay. So, what's your take first on Trump going to dinner the other night?
It's just going to dinner. You know, you have to realize this is my perspective on it based on my experiences from before and what I see now. And Mr. Trump is the president-elect because he's not a politician. He's going to do things a little unorthodox. He's going to do things, try to be as close to the way he normally lived his life. Now, he's not going to, listen, this is a guy, and the feedback I'm getting from people that I know that are still there is the Trumps are very nice people, and he understands. There was a story just out not too long ago of, you know, him setting up food to feed the Secret Service. You know, that's not normal. It's usually left up to the Secret Service individual themselves to feed themselves, or, you know, so this is a guy who cares. He's going to do things a little unorthodox. They went out to dinner. The service did the survey, I'm sure. They had it all set up. And it is what it is. You know, if he doesn't want to notify the press, that's up to him.
Okay, let's go into that a little bit, which I totally agree with you. I totally agree with Trump. I wouldn't want the idiot press on breathing down my neck all the time. But how much does the Secret Service, you know, their main thing is to guard the president and or president-elect. Does the press get in the way, and does the Secret Service have to push back on them on occasion?
Yeah, they do at times. Now, let's back up a little bit. Let's go back to President Reagan. John Hinckley, back when John Hinckley tried to assassinate President Reagan, the Secret Service didn't control the press like they do today. And I'll explain what I mean by that when I say control the press. I don't mean by their methods, but their movement, and I'll explain that. John Hinckley blended in outside the hotel in Washington, Hilton in Washington, D.C., and kind of disguised himself or made himself look like he was part of the press, and they didn't secure it at the time, and that's how he was able to get so close to Reagan. So now the service learned from that lesson. So they control the press pool. They keep it secured. That agent knows everybody's been screened. They either have a hard White House press pass or a temporary pass. They've been screened, and they keep control of them. And that way, when they go to the restaurant, they know that that press pool is secured. They know they've been checked out, and it's much safer, as opposed to you just can't walk up and say, I'm going to jump in the press pool. But I will say that they are prepared for that, because I've been on detailed where I've screened people at the event, at the restaurant, at the beach, wherever they were. At the last minute, a press person would come up, and they said, you know, screen them, and we would run the handheld metal detector over them, check their stuff, and then they would get into the press pool. But that's very unusual. They've already done a background check on this person in particular, in this case. But that's the thing. Mr. Trump's not going to be, he's not a politician. He's not going to bend and fold to them. Let's face it, the press has treated him completely unfairly in many ways. So he's probably, you know, things will find even ground here as he gets closer to getting sworn in, and as they get used to him and he gets used to them, things will smooth out. But the Secret Service will do their job no matter what.
You know, it would seem to me, and again, if I ask you something that you feel uncomfortable answering or that the public doesn't need to know, well, just tell me, but it would seem to me like, and I'm just a dummy in Atlanta, but okay, we for all practical purposes now, we've got two presidents, so to speak. So how elastic is the Secret Service? Are they calling field people in from my hometown, Lubbock, Texas, to come in and help? Or everybody, they don't have 1,000 agents sitting there waiting for the next president to come along, but they're having to do double duty. They're having to protect Obama, and they're having to protect Trump.
Right. So, right. So basically how it works, you have PPD, which stands for Presidential Protection, and those are the people that are protecting President Obama right now. And the truth is, they've never, in my opinion and in other people's opinion, especially the employees that are there now, they never seem to have enough. It's tough to keep a lot of agents on there. There was a survey done about 2 years ago, and they recommended that there be 80 more agents added to PPD and another 200 uniform division officers to the White House. But, you know, it's just hot. It's hard and expensive to hire those people. But what they can do, as their manpower needs change, they will bring agents in from other field offices, from Texas, from New York. They'll look for guys that have some time on, that have done protection before. They'll bring them on. They'll work them into President Trump's detail. And they are already lining up who's going to be the permanent guys on that detail. But they don't do everything great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, when it comes to protection, they're great. But sometimes they have some management issues with their employees. But they'll get the job done. These guys are going to work. They are going to work their butts off. Everybody is working overtime, the agents, the officers, but they will get the job done.
Gary, let me interrupt. We got to take our second break. We'll be back with Gary Burns right after this.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is Skip Coriel, host of the Home Defense Show on America's Web Radio. Join me every week as we explore all aspects of home and family defense as we strive to defend the ones we love in an ever-changing and volatile world.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren. On Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we're back on the Dan and Dave Show. I'm Dave, and Dan is Dan, but Dan isn't here right now. He had an appointment that he had to make this morning, but we've got Gary Burns on the line with us, and Gary is a former uniformed Secret Service agent that was assigned to the White House and protected the Clintons, and my opinion that Gary's book helped probably get the Clintons or keep the Clintons from getting back in office, which I'm totally thrilled about. Gary, we were talking about the transition period between the president-elect and what all has to go on. At what point will he change from the Trump airline to a secured airline, a U.S. airline, or Air Force One and a Half or something?
So typically, the day he gets sworn in, he'll start using Air Force One. But I will tell you, the plane that Mr. Trump has is a good plane. It's modern. He spends a lot of money on it. It's well-maintained. But there's certain things that aren't on that plane. Now, he will eventually have to start flying on Air Force One. I mean, I guess if he doesn't want to, they'll have to work something out. But here's the thing. They have to modify his personal plane so much to protect it from electronic eavesdropping, certain security systems on it. Air Force One, the Boeing 747 that the Air Force has, two of them they maintain for the president, they're kind of like a version of a flying, you know, tank almost. They're very sturdy. They have a lot of security procedures on it. And they also have a small surgical suite. God forbid the president is somewhere else in the country or the world and he gets injured. The doctor can actually do surgery on him on the airplane and other people if they're injured. They have a very good medical setup on that plane. So it would only make sense for him to go ahead and kind of bite the bullet and transition and use Air Force One like a typical president would. And I think that's what he'll do, but who knows, you know. But the truth of the matter is his plane, as big as it is too small to put all that staff and stuff on there.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. And it's my understanding that basically where Air Force One goes, Air Force, the other Air Force One is there with them, that they always basically
They only have a backup plane. And it depends on where they're going and the size of the airport and what the backup plan is.
Yeah, we had a good friend that flew, instead of the 747, he was flying the 737. And this was as a matter of fact, you may have known him because he was the pilot for the Clintons and hated it. But he flew the smaller plane, and like you were going to say, whenever Clinton would go to Hilton Head or a smaller airport, and people don't know this, but they do fly smaller planes, and he had already retired, but had the contacts, and when my son was who is a Air Force captain now, when my son was at Texas A&M, and Bush would come into Waco, well, he got a tour of Air Force One. Didn't get to see all of it because of his security, but did get to tour what could be seen.
Yeah, that's very nice.
So, anyway, it's who's sitting on top of the fence calling all these plays for the Secret Service right now?
Well, the director of the Secret Service, Joe Clancy, is the head of the Secret Service, and he gets a lot of he has a lot of authority. The director of the Secret Service is in the civilian life is equivalent to like a 4-star general. He has a lot of power, a lot of responsibility, and he's the one making these plays. And then his chain of command, the ADPO, as they call him, the Assistant Director of Protective Operations. They're making all this stuff happen, and I know it sounds like it sounds almost insurmountable, but the Secret Service has done similar things like this for many, many years. So they know what they're doing. They will get the manpower that they need. Believe me, the Secret Service agents and officers, when the election's over, when the inauguration is over, and they get to take a break and take a deep breath, they'll be grateful for it.
Do you miss it?
I miss some of it. I do. I miss the kind of unfettered access to the White House. I miss the. I do miss the pageantry. The best place in the world to be, I swear, this sounds crazy to some people, but the best place in the world to be around Christmas time is at the White House. I mean, wow. It's literally magical. It's wonderful. I talk about it quite a bit in my book, Crisis of Character. It's it was a very enjoyable place to work.
What do you hear about if you can say? About, we know how the Clintons treated the Secret Service. We know how the Bushes treated the Secret Service. What do you hear about the Obamas?
I hear they're very nice. About 4 years ago, I was down in Washington, and I ran into a friend of mine who was still working at the White House. And then I ran into actually an agent on the road one time at another airport who I knew. And they both said they're pleasant, they're nice, their children are nice. No big issues, you know. They're very, very kind. No big issues. Definitely not like the Clintons, and probably closer to closer to the way the Bushes were.
The Bushes sort of bent over backwards for the Secret Service, didn't they?
You have to put it in context. You got to remember, George Herbert Walker Bush had been vice president for 8 years before he was president. He was, of course, as you know, he was Ronald Reagan's president. He was also the former director of the CIA. He was an ambassador to China. He knew all about how the government works. He knew the Secret Service. He had been protected by them for a long time. He's just a very nice guy, very generous, his whole family. And they were a pleasure to protect, that's for sure.
If you had one, like you said, President Trump, when he becomes president, will be probably a little unorthodox. What do you think the biggest shock will be for him as far as the relationship between he and the Secret Service?
That he's got to learn to tell them what it is he wants to do. The Secret Service doesn't want to be a spoiler. But you need to tell them if you want to go, like on a Monday, if you decide you're going to go out and have a, you know, go to a restaurant down the street and go get a cheeseburger at Five Guys, you know, they would appreciate it if they knew it the day before. The more advanced they have, the more secure they can make the situation. The Secret Service tries not to get into the habit of saying no, because at some point you really can't say no. So the more information they get and the sooner they get it, the more they can make it work without protecting.
And do you feel secure that, there is a good chance, obviously, with our political situation and the potential of terrorism? Do you feel like our president, Obama, and or to be Trump, is the protection adequate?
Yes, I believe it is. Again, these agents and officers, the men and women of the Secret Service, they will do what they have to make it work. And they will, they'll be exhausted by the time it's over, and they are working tons of overtime. And in some cases, the agents actually end up working for free because there's some kind of rule about the way they're paid, and they top out. So a lot of these senior guys that are running the details for President Obama, for President Trump, for some of these other people, they actually have to work quite a few hours a week or a pay period, and they're not actually getting paid. And that's something the service has been trying to get changed for years, but they've never been able to get anybody to do it. So maybe this will bring some light to it. And the uniform division too, they just work ungodly hours. But that's the job, and they will get it done. And yes, I do believe the protectees, all of them, are safe.
If we've got Trump going to the 21 Club or going anywhere, or Obama, if we see 20 agents, how many agents do we not see?
Yes, that's a good point. So you normally don't see the counter-sniper guys on the roof, which are the uniform division counter-sniper technicians. You might not see, there may be one or two agents in the restaurant that just look like everybody else. There's no way to know exactly how many people they have that are blending in, but they do. And again, that they about 15 years ago, they went to 18 years ago. They started going to great lengths to get training to blend in more, because we're famous. The Secret Service was famous for having the agents that you knew about. So they wanted to perfect the ideal of having agents you can't see and protectors you can't see. And so they've become very good at that. They do that. And there's no telling how many they are, but they're there, and they're doing a great job, believe me.
Oh, I absolutely do. I want to ask, we're going to have to take another break here in about a minute, but I was in D.C. This was a number of years ago, and there was a protest march, as there is every day in D.C. for something, leaves,
right.
Leaves falling, let's protest it, And I was staying at the Marriott, and there was a division, or I don't know what, well, snipers from the D.C. Police Department, and I got to be friends with one of them, and wound up, as a matter of fact, they were there all night, all day, all night, and so forth, and one night I bought everybody dinner. Whenever they had come down, their dinner was on me, and I got to be friends with one of them, and he had been a uniformed officer, I guess, in the Secret Service at the White House, and then he had gone from there to the D.C. Police Department. But there is, I don't know how many different agencies / police / whatever else you want to call them that are involved in D.C. And when we come back,
the jurisdiction in D.C. is a nightmare for the directors and the chiefs of these agencies.
Let's take a break, and Gary, let's take a break and talk about this when we come back. Okay.
Do you have time? Do you have another minute left?
No. Let's come back to it, and when we come back, we'll talk about the overlapping. We'll be back right after this.
Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, we specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery and correction of a deviated nasal septum and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office. We use a state-of-the-art equipment so that you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment. We believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. You can rest assured that all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
This is Skip Coriel, host of the Home Defense Show on America's Web Radio. Join me every week for a full hour of all the best and latest information on how you can get the skills and equipment you need to protect the ones that you love.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And you're back on America's Web Radio and the classic, the Dan and Dave Show. And we've got Gary Burns on with us today. And I want to thank Gary and for being on. And we've already shaken hands, and he's going to be on some more times in the future. We were talking, when we left, we were talking about the overlap of I don't know if the right term is jurisdictions, or you've got so many agencies in D.C. You've got the D.C. police. You've got the Uniform Secret Service.
Yeah, it's referred to as jurisdiction, and it is very bizarre at the White House, because the Secret Service has jurisdiction inside the White House up until the fence line, and then after that, from the fence line to the sidewalk, is the park police, and then from the one side of the street to the other is the Metropolitan Police Department. So it gets, of course, everybody works together, but it can be a little funny at times.
How is the communications? Is that a difficult situation, or does everybody tune to the same channel and go for it?
I'm sorry, I'm losing your signal. I can't hear you.
It sounds like you're walking someplace.
I'm standing still. I'm actually up on a mountain, and I think we're getting some interference. I'm so sorry.
No problem. What I asked was, if there's, is everybody on the same radio channel, that if something comes along, they can all talk at the, hear at the same time, or is it a problem?
Yeah, I can't hear you again.
It sounds like you're getting some wind action up there. And what I was asking is, when you're in a situation, I tell you what, let's go to a different subject. You've got a new book that you're starting to write. Can you tell us something about your book, your new book?
Yeah, I'm going to probably be writing a second book. We're not really sure of the name yet. We're right now as a working title. We're just calling it Book 2, or Crisis of Character 2. It's going to focus on a little bit of the election. It's going to focus on how my motivation changed as far as writing the book. It started out just to get the truth out about Mrs. Clinton, the first book, and then as it morphed and Mr. Trump ended up beating 16 other Republicans, and then he became the nominee. Basically, I kind of morphed, and it wasn't just about getting the truth out about Mrs. Clinton. It was about keeping her out of office. And then it kind of morphed from there to, pro-Trump. I wanted Mr. Trump to win. And because that became the apparent way that I was going to try to help keep Mrs. Clinton
from being president of the United States. So, and then we'll talk a little bit about that in the second book, and a little bit more about the Secret Service and my time as an Air Marshal.
Do you, you know, there's quite a bit of talk right at the moment about, and I don't know how much you got involved when the Clintons were in power, and obviously they didn't have the foundation at that point, but there's quite a bit of talk about the new AG, Attorney General, potentially going after the Clintons, whereas the current AG wouldn't, obviously won't touch them. Do you feel like there's reason to go after the Clintons?
I do. And I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't frame it as going after them. I think it's the Justice Department's job to go and look at these things. If the same rumors were swirling around you and I, they would be investigating us. If they thought that you and I had broken the law with using classified government information and a private server, they'd come after us. And if they thought that we were using large amounts of money that were being collected for a charity, and it looked like pay for play, they would come after us. So, yes, I think they should do an investigation. And whatever the evidence turns up, and move on it accordingly.
Amen. Amen. So, what else do you think the public should know and appreciate about what's going on today?
I'm sorry, could you ask that one more time?
Sure. What else do you think that the public should know about what's going on today? Is it taxing the Secret Service for Trump to be a billionaire and have all of the toys that he has, or is this helping? I would assume he is still maintaining some of his own security.
Well, at some point, I don't know exactly where and when he'll stop maintaining his own security, but at some point that he will, more than likely. And you also have to realize that a lot of those people that were his private security were actually former Secret Service people. So eventually the Secret Service, based on what I experienced in the years I was there and what I know now, they will take over complete security because they're the ones that will be responsible for it. But... you know, they'll try to work with President Trump as much, or President-elect Trump as much as they can. But at some point, they'll be in control of everything. What's going on with them right now is they're working night and day. They're working very long hours. The agents are working probably minimum 12-hour days. They're working 6-7 days a week, and they'll do that for weeks at a time, and then they'll get a day off. The officers at the White House are traveling all over. They're setting up metal detectors in New York. They're also covering President Obama, of course, because he's still the sitting president, Vice President Biden. So they're doing everything they were doing before, and now they're protecting the Trump in two different places. But that's the name of the game. There's nothing wrong with it. That's the way it is. And they will adapt and overcome. That's been in my experience with them.
Gary,
I've done many of the things that they're doing today. I've done myself, so I greatly appreciate what they're doing, and I sympathize with them at the same time.
Gary, who as the appointees come on board, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of whatever, Homeland Security, the Secretary of the State Department, who's in charge of protecting them?
Right. So some agencies protect them, like State Department has State Department security, and they're trained like the Secret Service. The Secret Service will probably be protecting the head of Homeland Security. The Department of Defense has its own security. Some of the cabinet heads, most of the cabinet heads have their own security detailed. Sometimes, under certain circumstances, the Secret Service will take over because of something that happened. You know, they're a certain threat. Or they might just provide them with more intelligence. I mean, they're always passing intelligence if they have it, but they may have to adjust. And things, for instance, I remember during the Clinton administration, after they attacked some terrorist assets in Africa, they changed the way they were protecting some of the people, and they were actually started giving the chief of staff protection.
Hmm. So, in the event that the president and the Secretary of State are on Air Force One flying to wherever, do both agencies protect? Or I know they have a trail plane and many many trailers, actually.
Right.
But, you know, is there a combined effort to protect them both?
So the best way to describe that to you is, let's talk about the White House first. So let's say the Secretary of Defense comes to the White House. They come in usually on a West Exec or one of the other roads that are inside the White House complex, and their detail will stay there, except for the lead agent will come in, and the lead agent will stay at the first post, the first uniform division post, inside the White House. And because now his protectee is also in the White House and being protected by the Secret Service. So the lead agent will stay pretty close to where his protectee is, but all the agents don't come in just because there's only so much room. And the same thing applies on an airplane. If they're going to fly together on Air Force One, there might be one agent from his detail there, and then the rest of them will be waiting wherever they're going to.
Wow. I tell you, the coordination of all of this just absolutely boggles my mind. Gary, we've got 1 minute to wrap up. What would you like us to know, either about your new book or when you're going to come back to a visit with us, or what are your thoughts on Christmas?
I'm sorry, my thoughts on what?
Or what are your thoughts on Christmas?
Christmas. I'm looking forward to Christmas for myself and my family. I always enjoyed Christmas at the White House. It's always a wonderful place to be. I think the Trump family is going to enjoy that greatly, watching the White House set up for Christmas. It's going to be a great time. And I wish a happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas to everybody that's listening.
Well, we appreciate it. And I've got your number. I'm going to keep your number, and I'm sure if you don't mind being a guest with us again, and as things transpire, and it should be interesting with the new president, we'll give you a holler and get you back on America's Web Radio.
No, that would be great. I'd love to hear from you.
Gary, thank you very much. We'll be talking to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir. You're listening to America's Web Radio and the Dan and Dave Show. And as I mentioned, Dan had an appointment he had to go to this morning. But we want a special thanks to Gary Burns. He's just been so gracious and so nice to be on the Dan and Dave Show and on America's Web Radio a couple of times now, three times, I believe. And go out and get his book if you want to read about the Clintons and the true story about who we had in that White House for a while and the kind of people they were, which does not say a whole lot for them, as a matter of fact. But we appreciate you listening. We'll be back next week on the Dan and Dave Show, and hope you'll stay tuned now for the NSPS Hour with Kurt Sumner. Thank you for listening.